It's Power Hour, LSU.
This is going to be the most bizarre start of any live stream I have ever had in my life. I love my viewers. There's nobody on the planet Earth I want to spend a Super Bowl Sunday with than you. And I want to shout out the LSU monster. I didn't think this would be the first comment. We normally don't go this live on a Sunday. I give this day to the National Football League. But my goodness gracious, I wanted to talk about the wildest transfer portal stat for LSU, but we got to shout out the LSU monster. I mean, I don't go live on Thursday because I made a last second trip to Austin, Texas to go to the LSU women's game. Don't go live on Friday. Don't go live on Saturday. Push back to Sunday. And this is what I get. Hey, Carter, guess what? I had a great first date with a black woman as a white man, and now we are planning on going to a second date. Well, congrats to you, the LSU monster. You'll never go back. I love it. And welcome. Congratulations. Hopefully the date goes great the next time. And tell her to come hang out as a part of the live stream. We welcome in everyone from all around the world. You can date Asians, Caucasians, Malaysians, Smurf, Ogres. Whoever you want to date, you are welcome to be a part of the PHL community. We bring everyone in together. And I do want to actually start with a tip of the hat to Kim Mulkey. What a bounce back victory versus Auburn today. I also want to shout out Jay freaking Johnson. That is the ultimate American. That is my number one American right now. It's Jay freaking Johnson. Actually, it's Monster Milam, then it's Jay freaking Johnson. I'm so excited for LSU baseball starting up here pretty soon. So, you know, I want to start with the wildest transfer portal stat. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. It was a rough Super Bowl for our LSU Tigers, but once again, shout out to the legend that is Anthony Bradford. He had a tough Super Bowl, but whatever. He won the game. He gets a ring. Love that there were five LSU Tigers, and there was actually more than that if you include practice squad, but what a Super Bowl it was. This is the wildest stat for me, though. LSU simply did not lose anyone in the transfer portal. I want you to really sit and think about that. Think about how many great football players came to LSU with a brand new coaching staff. Now, is there monetary reasons why some of the players came? Sure. You know, we're playing professional football now. We get that. But even when you consider that to be the case, and if you were to look at LSU and you were to look at any team, even with a brand new coach, you were to look at 34 players leaving the team to go to a new team, not a single one of these players that you see here were what we would consider to be an above average starter. All right, maybe you throw in Kyle Parker. Maybe. And maybe on occasion, Juwan Johnson as a gadget guy and a good glue guy. And maybe a few snaps mixed in there for Ahmad Bro. And maybe you look at some of the special teams work that some of the players mentioned. And obviously, I'm always going to have a soft spot in my heart for a man that was criticized, I think, a little too much for doing something very unselfish for a sinking ship. And that, of course, is Michael Van Buren. But really think about that now that the dust is settled here and everybody has gone on to their new stops, there wasn't a single player that you could consider to be somebody that you lost that was important to your operation. So you didn't really get outbid. These were all guys that moved on, and there wasn't a Tre'Davious Green that left. There wasn't a Harlan Berry that left. There wasn't, obviously, to me, the most important player to retain is DJ Pickett. He didn't leave. You kept in a very close decision Whit Weeks. That probably wasn't as close as some thought. Once the Lane Kiffin rumors really picked up, it was pretty obvious that Whit, if Lane were to stay, was going to hang around. We'll talk about Whit a little bit later in everybody's favorite segment, What Did Lane Tweet Today? But, you know, as much as I wanted to dive deep and put together a two deep, I did want to mostly focus in on some of the guys that might have turned into something, and Carius Kern is probably the one that will hurt you the most because he was a true freshman, and true freshman offensive linemen normally aren't that good. And at his next stop at Ole Miss, he's probably going to be a good player. Probably. All right, but even that's a step. All right, so outside of Kyle Parker, where wide receiver, especially in a lane offense, is very replaceable, this was the single best transfer portal season we have ever seen at LSU. And no, Joe Burrow doesn't count. He was a graduate transfer. And obviously, Jaden is the best transfer we've had. But even that, and it's a graduate transfer. You don't really consider that to be transfer portal era kind of thing, right? It's a little bit different. So, you know, as I dive deeper, as I put together, you know, some projections for what I think LSU can do next year, it is so important that you don't lose out on those key guys, those guys that can really move the needle for you. And I would say probably of the players that LSU retained, there was six-ish of those guys that they retained that truly are needle-moving players. And they went 6-for-6. That's about where I stood with where LSU was. Now, some of those are fringe guys, but for real. Now, I will say, if Caden Durham had left, I still think Caden Durham has all SEC potential, and he's going to come into next year more than likely as your RB2. So, and I think he can be RB1. Now, obviously, this is the single most important thing I'm going to share with each and every one of you. We'll go back to our normal Sunday night 8 p.m. live stream schedule. You know, we're going to talk some NFL draft coming up. Where's Garrett going to fall in the draft? We're also going to talk more baseball as, you know, the season really kicks into gear. I'll have baseball experts on. The guy that covers LSU baseball better than anybody on the planet Earth will join us Tuesday night. We're reconnecting with the great John Eads. And there's a lot of people that cover LSU baseball really well. But John has to do it with a 60-pound camera on his shoulder. So I always have some leniency and some favoritism to the local TV guys because their jobs are hard. They're very, very, very hard. Okay. Now, I want to talk about the Super Bowl because it did just happen. This was a tough offseason. I say offseason, postseason for Will Campbell. All right. And I normally stay away from talking about LSU players in the NFL because I just kind of like to cheer about them. You know, I think it is important, even though NFL success of LSU players is kind of a dying battle with the YouTube algorithm. It always tells me, hey, just stick on the current roster. But I do feel it's important that we talk about how Will performed, because there's not going to be a more beloved LSU player that is going to get abused more this offseason by the press than Will Campbell. And I could even see it be worse than what it's going to be with Drake May and how this game played out. So Will's going to really need your support. I'm telling you right now, they always say, hey, New York media is the worst media in the country. That is not true. New York is too busy of a city to just be locked in on football. They've got two bad football teams in New York. They've got two baseball teams. They have the Knicks. They have everything going on in New York. The truth is, the two most brutal media markets are Philly and Boston. Those are the two hardest. That their local media is ruthless. And Boston isn't as diverse when it comes to their sports teams. Will Campbell is about to take it on the chin for how this performance was this postseason. And Will, I want to publicly say, I have your back, dude. I have your back. And if Will was sitting right here, he'd say, yeah, I didn't play my best. I did not do what the team asked of me this postseason. So, Will, I have your back. You're going to get better. Even if they move you to guard, which is going to be a big discussion this offseason for the Patriots, you're going to be a Pro Bowl guard. So Will really needs your support because, by golly, G. Willikers, he did everything for our team for three seasons, and I'm so happy that he did that. But, man, that was tough. It was tough. It was really, really, really tough. And I would love to have him on our team again. Could you imagine Will Campbell and Jordan Seaton on the same offensive line? Are you freaking kidding me? You have to admit, as bad as that Super Bowl was and as insufferable as the political discussion it was throughout the entire game, I thought the Bad Bunny halftime show was fantastic, by the way. Lady Gaga, are you kidding me? I'm so excited. My wife and I are going to go see her in a few weeks. I love Bad Bunny. All right. Do I know Spanish? No. Did I do a wedding for a PHLer, by the way, who requested a lot of Bad Bunny, and I played a lot of Bad Bunny at the wedding? Yeah. So I've listened to a decent amount. But, you know, it was hard if you're an LSU fan if you watch that. watching Will go up against, and ironically, the guy that beat him early in the game was Derek Hall, who Will faced as a true freshman when Derek Hall was at Auburn. So, Will, I've got your mother effing back, dude. We have, if there's a group of fans that's willing to go in a fist fight to the death versus Boston fans, it's LSU fans. So Felger and Mass or whatever the name of the big show, Scott Zolak, if you want to come after me, come after me. Because Will is, you're going to see Will turn this bitch around. Let's go, Will. I got your back. And we get a very nice super chat here from Julie, good to see you. From James. James, thank you for the super chat. Julie also donated as well, I believe. Thank you so much. Now, once again, Anthony Bradford, LSU national champion and Super Bowl champion. There's not many of those. Andrew Whitworth is obviously in that group. But LA Mom answers a poll question. I have it up. Which one is better, college football or the NFL? You know, I was able to be a part. I want to shout this guy out. Squid. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the last name of his channel. But I'll link it down below. I was a part of one of his breakdowns not too long ago. So if you are a viewer of his channel and you found my channel, I'm shouting you out because I love old Squid. Squid's a beast, man. Okay. Now, let's get to H-Town Creole. Carter, this has been all season. Will has struggled as far. Emery, third string, getting demoted. Yeah, it wasn't great. But Emery Jones had some injury issues, I believe. I don't do a whole lot of Ravens coverage. But Now, I want to talk about the next thing that I've written down here, because I do want to break down the Super Bowl at length. Just a few things that I jotted down when watching this game. You know, in the NFL, defense reigns supreme. This was a tough Super Bowl and just a tough playoffs for the quarterbacks. And it's interesting to me because in the collegiate game, quarterback play has also suffered. So one thing that I think, because the one thing I like about the Super Bowl is fans have to sit and watch the game. Same thing for the national championship game and a few of the playoff games. It's the only game that's on. And one consistent theme is how much harder it is to play offense now. It used to be in the Drew Brees era, offense was easier. Now, Drew Brees was better at putting up big points than everyone else, but it was just easier. And a good bit of that is because of the defensive complexities that now exist in the modern game. Now, why is that important? Well, I think many people feel the same way they do about Mike McDonald that they do about Blake Baker. Young, energetic, affable, and very complex defensively. And you know, it does excite me because I, this offseason, or just, I guess you could say over the past couple of months of the season, since obviously the Clemson game, which was one of the best defensive game plans of the modern era in LSU football, really was that great. Blake had some tough games this year, some really, really, really tough games. But I do think it's in his range of outcomes that he could be the next Mike McDonald. Because there were a few of these slot corner blitzes that Seattle threw in the way of New England that Baker also runs. And basically, the reason why offense is so hard now, it's not that Will Campbell got beat by defensive ends. He also got beat by blitzing defensive backs. And the slot corner blitz is so difficult for offenses to stop. Now, I could get into a whole tirade about why that is. There's two things at play here. The first is it's so well disguised now, not just by the slot corner blitz, but the safety rotation after it. And then number two, because linebackers and edge blitzers that are on the line of scrimmage, when they crowd the line, they're so much more athletic that when they drop out and a slot corner blitz is coming from someone you don't expect to blitz, they have a full head of steam, and the guy dropping out is a better athlete. So you got two things going against you defensively. So what happened in this game was Seattle just kept spamming that blitz, and a lot of it was Witherspoon, number 21. So when the Patriots solved it and Will Campbell was picking up the blitzer, he still got beat. So this is really hard. It is really, really, really hard to score at college and at the NFL level. Sometimes it's blitzing. The worst is when it's blitzing and you can't block four rushers. Last year, when the Eagles dominated the Chiefs, it wasn't blitzing. It was just the Chiefs' offensive line couldn't block the Eagles' front four. It was just quarters on the back end, and that's it. This was a mixture, and it's hard. So what does that have to do with LSU now? Well, Lane's the best offensive coach in the country. It's just that simple. So coaching this up is going to be so much more important. Something else is you can't be as exotic on the back end if you're going fast. And what I think is going to happen, the next evolution in football, is you're going to have teams needing to run the hurry up. Because if you're running the hurry up and you're going faster, you simply can't do as much defensively. You can't sub out as much. You can't do as many post safety or post-snap rotations, pre-snap rotations, and all of that. And with Lane and the offense going faster, you're going to have easier looks offensively, which is why I was so big on getting Lane to LSU. I'm a big believer in going fast offensively. I am. And I think some NFL teams are going to think about doing that. Let's go to Shamor Nelson. The reason why I did the college football versus NFL question, and Shamor, thank you for being a member, is because this was the NFL's best product. The Super Bowl was an elite product. I thought the commercials were great. I can get into a whole media diatribe about what I think commercial executives all did. I think there was an overcorrection in one area. If y'all, we'll talk about that a little bit later if y'all want to get into the nerdiness of it, because I want this channel to mostly be about football. But there was something I saw with the commercials. It was far more celebrity-driven this year. And I'll tell you, I could tell you why, but y'all aren't here for media, business, newsletter kind of stuff. I'm no Joe Pompolino. Shamor says, I love college football by far. Less games. Every game really matters. Fans go crazier due to school pride. And the college rivalries are insane. Yeah, you are right about the games still mattering. But I'll tell you, I'll push back on this, Shamor. So why did the Seahawks win this game? Well, it's because they had the one seed. The one seed mattered so much, especially for them, because have a really good offensive operation and defensive operation. Well, they beat the Rams. You know, the Rams were the favorites to win the Super Bowl for a good portion of the season. And why did they beat the Rams? Well, the Seahawks had that ridiculous comeback versus the Rams thanks to New Orleans Saints legend Rashid Shaheed. So that regular season game changed the one seed. That punt return. That Thursday Night Football legendary game. And if you didn't see it, that was probably the most college football-esque NFL game ever played. And they won on a two-point conversion at the end. So, you know, with college, you don't, that argument is weakened. It is really weakened that the regular season is that much more valuable in college than it is in the NFL. Now, I still believe it is. I still do. But that gap has shrunk now that we've gone to a 12-team playoff. It really has. Now, with Indiana, that changes. But, you know, at least with Miami, the Notre Dame result truly did matter. But the year before, it was a bad, bad, bad season for us people like us, Shamor, where we are regular season college football purists. All right. Something else, though, to Trojan Fight, and his point, or her point, is that you do realize how important it is to play strong teams. And for those that don't know, the Patriots played the easiest schedule in NFL history out of any NFL playoff team ever. And that showed. I was on the Seahawks this game. I actually didn't bet anything in the Super Bowl. I just kind of wanted to watch it. But I was on the Seahawks. Let's go to Amicat. CFB is way better, but at least the NFL has some playoffs figured out. You are right about that. All right. We'll go to an early break here. Coming up next, everyone's favorite segment. What did Lane Kiffin tweet today? It was a bit of a doozy.
Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of Laborde Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at Laborde Therapy worked hard to fix that back, your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053, call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, laboretherapy.com, with locations in Aaron Crow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. LaboreTherapy.com. LABORDE therapy.com. Let's go.
All righty. You know, I made a mistake for the Super Bowl. So I went over to my parents' house to watch it. And I had like 20 chicken wings and two brownies. And I realized I didn't drink anything. And my mom, all right, I want to shout out to Stitos because my mom made some nachos to go with the chicken wings. I had some of those as well. Tostitos made the saltiest chip I've ever had in my life. And I didn't drink any water. Literally, I looked at my dad. I was like, this is the saltiest chip. Like, these chips were saltier than Ole Miss fans. My lips were puckering. There was something else in my body puckering too. Dude, it was... It was crazy, and I didn't drink any agua. So I was like, I got to go to early break. I even got some alkaline water to offset it. Crazy. So what did Lane Kiffin tweet today? We start off with fingerprints all over the field. So many SEC legends in the Super Bowl. And here we go. Good times with good people. My guy in the middle, Duck Dynasty, Willie. Is there anyone watching this right now that lives in Bernice, Louisiana? Because if you live in Bernice, you blink and you're out of there. You know the Willie sign in Bernice. I love it, man. Look at this place. Whit Weeks, Blake Baker. See Mr. Belton in the back. Assistant general manager. Is he Lane right there? How about that? Lane Kiffin getting a nice cup of coffee here. Good to see that. We'll keep it going. Lane Kiffin, after that night out with the Duck Dynasty, cutting up film. Man, I would do anything to sit and watch this. Watch him film with Lane. He's got the clicker, got the whole thing going. Got some sanitizer. It's important to stay sane in this society. Look at that. We keep it going. Get aboard the Lane train, baby. There's Lane with Willie. That's a nice shirt, too. Good times. Ooh, that king cake looks beautiful. Crawfish Town, USA. Let's go. All right. I need my golfers to tell me if Cookie has a good swing right here.
Here we go. We're off. Look at that. Right down the middle.
I guess. Juice has a doghouse. Look at that. One day they're going to ask, who do we call when you and Daddy aren't around? They just took my breath away. Knox Landry, a throwback. Best stadiums in the country. Tiger Stadium's number one. Will Campbell, who we defended a little bit earlier in the stream. I was recruited by Lane Kiffin. He's a dog. I love it.
But what you like to do? It's just different. You know, they walk through the cafeteria here and the student athletes, and you feel like you're in an Olympic training site. Who's the best baseball players in the world and the best women's basketball players? It's just LSU.
Let's go. If that doesn't fire you up, I don't know what does. One of one. Lane Kiffin says the most important position is the offensive line.
mind.
Genius. Because I think he's so inventive. It hasn't shifted. Like, you know, he was a guy that did some really interesting things, but he had super talented people at USC and at Alabama when he was offensive coordinator. Then he gets to Florida Atlantic and he still wins, right? He develops, he brings in the right players, and he's just been able to find the right fit. He knows the players that are going to be right for what he does. And so he's gone about that. And now he's going to have a free-for-all at LSU with the cupboard being able to be used for that aspect.
I've had my back and forths with Ryan Leaf. He deleted some tweets about me that I wish I would have screenshot many moons ago. But I will say he did speak to the team before last season. You want to know why things went bad? Here's a quote by Will Campbell.
Awesome. You know, I was recruited by Kiffin. He's a dog. I mean, I played against him for 3 years. You know, his resume speaks for itself. His, you know, high power offense. Blake Baker being back is awesome. And, you know, I'm just super excited for those guys.
Let's go, champ side. Got to follow you after that clip, man. Good stuff. Cookie. Cookie's a U-High kid. Now, I do want to shout out my buddy Chris Gordy. He gave me the heads up on the Peyton Houston interview he did. Chris Gordy, really good friend of the channel, did an interview with Locked On SEC. I think we covered these tweets the last time we were live. We're going to... There we go. I don't know if I could play for that clip. Kiffin went to bat for TJ Dottery today after people spread a lot of false BS on the internet for years. Got on Lane for going out of his way to do that. Okay, and yeah, that's about it. We covered these in our last live. Good work. That was What Did Lane Tweet Today. We hadn't been live since Wednesday afternoon when he went live after signing day. Got a few Chris Olave questions, which is interesting. Okay. Now, what we're going to do over the next couple of weeks is do some deep dives on Lane's staff, some of the new staffers, who they are, what are they about, what they could potentially bring. You know, it's important to understand from where we're sitting that so much of what a coaching staff does as far as how they coach, how they develop, is stuff that we really can't comment on because we're not watching them practice. And so much of how the players actually do perform comes down to the coordinators, right? Like, your coordinators have such a larger impact on what is actually going on than the position coaches. Now, that doesn't mean the position coaches aren't important. It's just the coordinators are that much more important in terms of play callers or whatever. Okay. Oh, hey, hey, hey. On your iPad? Watch Benito again. I left it on there. Why'd you unplug it? You're at 89.
No, it needs to be 100. Why'd you do that,
bro? I didn't unplug it.
Bro, you did.
I did unplug it.
You did.
Did you want to say hi? No, bunny ears?
No, I'm going to. Bunny ears for.
Oh, bad bunny. She's got like these little bunny ears. Okay. No. It's out of our budget. She wants to order Bad Bunny's sunglasses. The ones he actually wore in the game, the thing tonight. But anyway. For me, I lost my train of thought. I could actually look back at this. Okay, it's about play callers. Don't get married, folks, because your YouTube streams will get hijacked by your lovely, beautiful wives. All right. Your play callers have such a larger impact. And a good example of this is Steve Ensminger. One of the wildest things that really rattles you to your core isn't the fact that Steve Ensminger was the play caller of the single best offense of all time. What really rattles me is that he was on the field when LSU lost 21-0. He wasn't even an analyst. He was an on-field offensive coach, a tight ends coach. So remember, after 21-0 happened versus Alabama, what were we all saying? Fire the offensive staff. When the best play caller in LSU history you begin to realize, hey, how in the world did that even happen? Why weren't we having Steve call the plays the entire time? So at UCLA earlier this year, they put young Neuheisel as a play caller. They beat Penn State. So play callers, they really are that important. So who are your play callers? They're young, innovative, experienced guys. Blake Baker, Lane Kiffin, Charlie Weiss. Can't ask for a better combo than that. You simply can't. So let's go to Go Tigers. You and Amicat have the same thing. It's obvious to me that Joe Brady called the majority of the plays in 2019. Dude is an NFL head coach today. Man, I wish, because I think you're newer. Or actually, I don't know. But no, Steve called most of the plays. Now, was there heavy collaboration? Yes. Yes. But, I will always tell you, I'm not the most plugged in person on the play. I'm not going to be the Adam Schefter of LSU. I leave that to the Shea Dixons of the world, right? But what is this on my hand? Steve called a lot of the plays. Very collaborative. They sat right next to each other. And we wouldn't have done what we did if Joe never came. All right, so Brady and Ensminger were of equal importance, and you can even say that Brady had more importance than Slinger, but Slinger was very important. Very, very, very important. All right. Now, quick little rant here. I want to talk about temperament. So, I call a lot of basketball. I love doing college basketball play-by-play. If I could do college basketball play-by-play for the rest of my life, I'd be a happy person. I've been very fortunate to get to do it now for 4 years. And it's fun. I do it at the JUCO level. And at the level that I actually do it, they banned post-game handshakes. You cannot do a post-game handshake with the team because of fights. And this weekend, there were a lot of fights on social media at basketball games, women's basketball, men's basketball, more so at the high school level. It could just be my algorithm, and obviously the algorithm rewards violence. But, you know, I open up Twitter, I'm getting another fight at a high school game or at a 7-on-7 or whatever. But this is where it really crosses the line, because kids are kids. basketball arenas become big balls of potential energy that can quickly turn into kinetic. It feels like physics sometimes, energy from a game spilling over into a fight of two high school players. One thing that should not be accepted, though, is a coach accosting a player. A coach cannot, at the collegiate level, talk to a player like that. NFL, it's a little bit different. Pros, to me, it's a little bit different. And I saw yet again today, it wasn't as bad. I tweeted it out, though. It's kind of wild. A Florida Gator basketball assistant went after a player. Now, it wasn't anything crazy. I think the context of it was there was a late flagrant foul by Texas A&M, and a coach didn't appreciate it or whatever. Y'all, if you're an adult and you are at a sporting event, don't fight. There's a huge brawl at a 7-on-7. You have got to be the bigger man. But why are we allowing the Florida Gator athletic program to keep getting away with this? Jabbar Jalouk got to keep his job. Now he's at Texas. Then, of course, this happens. Under any circumstance, should a coach never touch an opposing team player unless you are truly breaking up a fight, and you should never, ever accost another team's player in a derogatory manner. You shouldn't do it. It's not your job. It's not your job. Okay? So, you know, if you're an adult, keep your ish together. Don't do that. Don't let the players do that. They're young. Let's go to this. Carter, what basketball coach would you want if they fire Matt McMahon? So, yeah, let's talk about Matt. Obviously, most of you want him out. I do, too. I wanted him out last year. All right, so we recruit a good roster. I think a roster good enough to be at least on the bubble or not close to it. And he's just not that good. And that's okay. We can argue that the rosters weren't what they need to be in the couple first seasons here. You know, one big defense that I'll give Matt McMahon is the coaching was so much better in the SEC when he first got in. But now it's a little bit weaker. Now that Bruce Pearl's gone, Nate Oates' team isn't as good. And we can go down the list of other SEC things that have happened. But, you know, I just think you have to move on. The problem is it's going to be expensive. It's going to be very expensive. You got to factor in, we have this new arena stuff. We have three elite sports that we need to fund heavily to maintain that level of excellence. We have more than three. You know, gymnastics is in that mix as well. So, yeah, it just comes down to, you know, the money. And then, of course, who wants it? You know? Is there a chance you can call Jay Wright? No, I don't think. I think Jay's a little too big. I think Jay Wright is like, well, if North Carolina gets bounced a little too early in the tournament, and I tell my agent, hey, I'm ready, then North Carolina is ready to move. I think that's a job every basketball coach at any level would want. And you then get into Tony Bennett, who's my guy. Sure. But I will say I did have a conversation not too long ago that I do think the Will Wade thing is something. Let's just connect some dots here. I understand this guy's not popular. But Ross Ellinger wrote the piece. And wrote a piece about President Roos Jeff Landry, and the want to bring Will Wade back. Now, who runs LSU now? Well, it's Verge, who was around when Will Wade was here. Then, of course, you, and obviously Verge was more in the football side of things, but come on. Now, Jeff Landry and Wade Roos are the two most powerful non-Verge people in LSU athletics. I do think it's more of a possibility. Now, here's a problem. Will's in his first season at NC State, and he just got there. You know, so what do you say? Hey, I'm ready to get back to LSU. Is Will Wade interested in coming back to LSU? I don't know. But I will say I did have a conversation that increased to me the likelihood of that happening from someone who would know. Like, it's way above me. All right. And like I said, I'm not really that kind of guy when it comes to this. I just want to talk about sports. Take that for what it's worth. And that excites me. I would love to have Will Wade back. I used to not feel that way. But not because he wasn't a great basketball coach, just I knew the Woodward thing wasn't going to work out. I'm a big believer in your athletic director and your head coach being in alignment. I say we ask Coach Mulkey to coach them in and let Simone coach the girls. I'm down. The problem, though, is like, we'll talk some women's basketball here. You know, God, and I don't want this to come off as like a criticism, but it's just what's actually happened. Dear Lord, there are so many blowouts in women's college basketball now. Like, midway through the third quarter today of the Auburn game, the Auburn Tigers had 13 points. 13 points. Now, this is, you know, LSU. They got the best coaching staff in the country. I tweeted that out. Obviously, I was in the moment. I know UConn and South Carolina, they have a lot of, you know, umph to say about that. But, of course, LSU was going to bounce back versus Auburn after getting blown out by Texas. And blowout is a strong word. But I was at the Texas game, and the first thing I tweeted out when I got back was, we're going to bounce back. We didn't play terrible versus Texas. And that fourth quarter got away from us. I was in the arena. It was a tough place to play. You could tell Texas wanted to get back at us for us beating them earlier in the year. So we get to now. And it is really hard to watch these games when the other team has 13 points in the third quarter. Now, the only good part is we're winning. And, you know, that's a great thing. I don't want to downplay the fact that we were winning the way that we were winning today. But sometimes when I am watching something that I personally have a vested interest in, I think of myself as a neutral viewer when it comes to watching that product. If a neutral viewer was twiddling their thumbs, not wanting to watch the Jason Garrett and Maria Taylor pregame, and they said, hey, let me put on Flage, and you're like, damn, a Division I P4 team has 13 points in the third quarter of a game, I'm probably not going to want to watch that. So, you know, I do think there have been more games that LSU has played this year that's been decided by 20 or more points than not decided by 20 points. That's insane. That is absolutely insane to think about. All right. Shout out LSU softball. If there's one Bet Arena fan still in existence in LSU media, consider that person to be me. Now, last thing before I get into the 5-minute warning that we like to do. Shout out to Sam Darnold. If my career has the Sam Darnold trajectory, which I think it is, I have failed so often in YouTube. I just need to find the right ecosystem to keep growing. And this is it, obviously. But, you know, I really appreciate Sam. And it's interesting that Sam, he reminds me a lot of Ed Orgeron, right? Except, obviously, Sam is not as interesting or affable or hilarious as Ed. But, you know, there's just not many people that exist in sports that truly has haters, that truly has doubters. Ed Orgeron, when he was hired by LSU, there wasn't a single person outside of the state of Louisiana that thought this was going to work. There also wasn't a single person outside the, well, let me rephrase that. There wasn't a person in Louisiana that felt 1,000% comfortable about Ed Orgeron. Now, you were right, ultimately, but Ed was mostly good before the wheels really fell off, right? He was great in 2017. We had a really good team in 2018, and then obviously you know what happened after that, and then you know what happened after that. Same thing with Sam Darnold, right? His the beginning of his career, it was Ed Orgeron at Ole Miss level bad, and he had true doubters. But since Sam Darnold's games with the Carolina Panthers years ago, he is the winningest quarterback in the NFL. Last year with the Vikings, this year with the Seahawks. Now, the likelihood that his trajectory now goes downhill like Ed Orgeron's did is pretty high. He's going to lose his play caller. You know, things are going to get harder. Teams are going to figure out, you know, more things about him. He had a couple of close calls tonight on tightly thrown balls and the tightly thrown windows. And, you know, the toughest teams he played in the Super Bowl or in the playoffs were pre-Super Bowl. You know, the Rams, to me, were probably the best team in the NFL this year. But the Seahawks edged them out close twice at home. So, you know, he won a Super Bowl that he didn't need to play all that well in, and he didn't. But Sam had real doubters. Real doubters. So shout out to Sam. Carter, do you think trades ever come to college football? And if so, what would I trade for Jeremiah Smith or Malachi Toney? Yeah, I mean, they already do happen. You know, obviously we had Tennessee and UCLA do what they did. Even that wasn't a direct trade per se. But yeah, if the players become employees, yes, trades are nearly inevitable. Especially if there's caps involved. How would that work? Could we see a world where there is one day a draft of high school players? I think theoretically you could. I do. But trades, I don't know if you'll see a trade per se. I don't know. I just can't freaking believe Sam Darnold. All right. So yeah, we will close this off. We'll do the 5-minute thing. Any more questions? I want to get to as soon as possible here. You know, one thing I found to be interesting. So last year, I got to go to the Super Bowl Radio Row. And we were able to, you know, we got to do our show, a live stream from the Super Bowl Radio Row, which was cool. Michael Brockers jumped on. It was awesome. But, you know, to me at Radio Row, the question or the discussion wasn't so much the game as it was the Hall of Fame. This was one of the best Hall of Fame classes. Luke Kuechly is the best linebacker I have watched since the year 2000. So basically my professional football watching career. I think he's better than Ray Lewis. I think he's better than Brian Urlacher. Drew Brees is obviously my favorite quarterback. And Larry Fitz is Larry Fitz, right? This was a really good Hall of Fame class. Shout out Roger Craig. We get Adam Vinatieri in, cool for kickers. But, you know, the big discussion were these former players. So, Deion Sanders, Randy Moss, and Emmitt Smith all took shots at the Hall of Fame voters. And the questions, what I don't like is when people don't push back against these legends whenever they go on these rants about this guy should be in the Hall of Fame, that guy should be in the Hall of Fame, or whatever. What I would say, though, is Tony Dungy is a voter, right? So Tony Dungy actually votes in the Hall of Fame. He's the only coach, former coach, that votes in it, and he's obviously in the Hall of Fame himself as a coach. Tony Dungy is also on NBC's broadcast, and they asked him, hey, who did you vote for in the Hall of Fame process? If Tony would have voted for Bill Belichick, he would have just said he voted for Bill Belichick. But Tony Dungy is spineless. He is spineless. He would not say who he voted for, which lets you know everything you need to know. I have a tough time believing that he voted and simply did not vote for Belichick. All right, if he did, he would just say, hey, I voted for him. No duh. So why would you go on a crusade against people like myself who's not a Pro Football Hall of Famer? And I don't have a vote for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but it's essentially a shot at, hey, if you didn't play at this level, you shouldn't get a vote. No, it doesn't matter if you played or if you didn't play. You have bad opinions. You have really, really, really bad opinions. I've had plenty of them. Good God, I've had plenty of them. I've had some really strong calls. I've had some really bad ones. I will say, what I don't like about the commentary business, it really does drive me insane that we do not give enough credit to people willing to make a negative or skeptical opinion of a player or coach when they're actually right about it. Let's go to Pegasus. I'm sad it seems like a lot of the blame is shifting to Will when Seattle's defensive line has been doing this all year. Yeah, you know, the thing that's weird about the Patriots and their postseason run is that no one's going to bring up that, yeah, their season schedule was easy, but their postseason schedule was the hardest postseason schedule defensively in the history of the sport. And it's not really even close. That's how tough their postseason defenses were. So that's a good point about Will. He played against some dudes. They should only let the men who are in the Hall of Fame vote, which is what Randy Moss said today. And that's the worst opinion you can have. There wouldn't be a more biased set of voters than the Hall of Fame voters. Everybody would get in. Julie, thank you for the super chat. We appreciate you. Kenneth Walker, Super Bowl MVP. Clint Kubiak, next head coach. The thing about the game itself not being great is that the political discussion becomes even louder because, you know, people want to talk about something from the game that they just watched. We're talking about the blowouts. Tennessee got blown out by South Carolina by 43 points today. Dude, college women's basketball can get like just really, really, really bad when it comes to the blowouts. Will needs to put on some weight, says Mac. I don't know. You know, if you really watched him closely, you do realize like he was going up against really elite competition. But there's going to be a lot of discussion about moving him to guard. A lot. the Boston radio. Like, that's why I'm saying I'm going to defend Will. I'll also tell you, man, another reason why I would go quick and go fast is that it does seem to help out your offensive line when you move faster, when you play faster. So there you go. All right, we will be back live again tomorrow, 6 p.m. Central, a normal live stream. Very lively Super Bowl. Remember this, like we started today with the LSU football discussion. Like, really go down the list of 34 players that LSU lost. The only thing that you would bring up is that you did lose so many snaps on the offensive line. But how many of those snaps were good snaps? Now, what I want each and every one of you to do, if you are a YouTube member, you can see our members have risen. We're at 77. We're trying to get to 100 by the end of the week. By the end of the week. That's going to be hard. By the end of the month, we're going to try to get to 100. Members, you know, one thing that I thought was fascinating. I sat and watched Joshua Dobson, the five-star corner that LSU is really pushing for, okay? And one thing I found to be interesting is he transferred. So he was a South Carolina corner. Now he's in North Carolina. And I sat down and watched a few of his games. And man, he has got some real juice. You know, when you really sit down and watch a player, you do begin to pick up on, you know, some things that need work. But this guy has tools that are hard to come by at 6'1", 170. And I hope LSU can close the door on him. All right. I don't like to do too much high school recruiting stuff, but LSU just has so much steam right now with this, and this is big. And you see how important the can't-miss five-star corners have been to the operation that is LSU. The last couple have been really good to us. So, yeah. We went on ahead and cut a Joshua Dobson highlight tape. In the next week or so, I'm putting together a Dobson film study. When he went up against one of the better receivers you can go up against in high school football, and I'll let you come to your own conclusion on Joshua Dobson, because week by week, you're not going up against D1P or D1 players. So be on the lookout for that. But if you're already a member or a patron, you could see the highlight tape of all of Dobson's best plays over his high school career. We cut one. And I want you to watch it, come to your own conclusions and see how you feel about him. But God, I hope we land. I really, really, really do. I understand it's not for this season, it's for the next season, but he could be that big of a deal for LSU football. Big thanks to our friends at Laborde Therapy, LaboredTherapy.com, and all our partners down here, including Fast Draft, Zion Imaging, and so on and so on. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. I'm glad Pegasus did not bring up one certain soccer team in blue who blew a lead today and broke my heart. There's one other thing that I screenshotted. I can't find it. Damn it. It was something I wanted to bring up at the very end. I'll find it for tomorrow's show. Tonight, we are doing, oh, some Sweet Mama T's chicken wings. Let's go. Let's go.